Everything's gonna be alright, I know. It's the coldest time of winter, and I shiver when I see the falling snow. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer town come summertime. Maybe even California. If we make it through December, we'll be fine. Got laid off down at the factory. Their timing's not the greatest in the world. Heaven knows I've been working hard. Wanted Christmas to be right for Daddy's girl. Come into hick December. It's meant to be the happy time of year. But my little girl don't understand why Daddy can't afford no Christmas here. But if we make it through December, everything's gonna be alright, I know. It's the coldest time of winter, and I shiver when I see the falling snow. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer town come summertime. Maybe even California. If we make it through December, we'll be fine.
America lacks a present. America has no now. We're reluctant to acknowledge the present. I guess it's too embarrassing. Instead, we reach into the past. Our culture is composed of sequels, reruns, remakes, revivals, reissues, re-releases, recreations, reenactments, adaptations, anniversaries, memorabilia, oldies radio, and nostalgia record collections. World War II has been refought on television so many times, the Germans and Japanese are now drawing residuals. Of course, being essentially full of shit, we sometimes feel the need to dress up this past preoccupation, as with pathetic references to reruns as encore presentations. Even instant replay is a form of token nostalgia, a brief visit to the immediate past for re-examination, before slapping it onto a highlight video for further review and re-review on into the indefinite future. This yestermania of ours includes fantasy baseball camps where aging sad sacks pay money to catch baseballs thrown by men who were once their heroes. It's part of the fascination with sports memorabilia, a memory industry, and it's so lucrative it has attracted counterfeiters. In this case, the age of hyphens, we are truly retro Americans. And our television newscasts not only reflect this condition, they feed it. Everything they report is twisted into some reference to the past. If there's going to be a summit meeting, you'll be told all about the last six summit meetings. If there's a big earthquake, they'll do a story about big earthquakes of the past. If there's a mine disaster, you'll hear about every mine disaster since the inception of mining. They're obsessed with looking back. I swear, I actually heard this next thing during a newscast as the anchorman went to a commercial break. He said, "Still ahead, a look back." Honest, he said it. Hurricane Hugo, 1 year later. Why? The anniversary of the Exxon Valdez oil spill. For what reason? The anniversary of the Bay of Pigs, Pan Am Flight 103, the hostages in Iran, the fall of the Berlin Wall, VJ Day, VE Day, Vietnam. Who gives a fuck? Bugs Bunny's 50th birthday, Lassie's 55th, the Golden Jubilee of Gone with the Wind, the start of the Korean War, Barbie celebrates her 35th, the 25th anniversary of the New York blackout, Bambi turns 50. Shit, I didn't even like Bambi when I was supposed to. How much do I care now? There's really no harm, I guess, in reviewing the past from time to time. Knowing where you've been is part of knowing where you are and all that happy horse shit. But the American media have an absolute fixation on this. They rob us of the present by insisting on the past. If they were able, I'm sure they would pay equal attention to the future. Trouble is, they don't have any film on it. And so, on television news, there is oddly very little emphasis on the present, on today's actual news. The present exists only in 30-second stories built around 8-second sound bites. Remember, sound bite is their phrase. That's what they give you. Just a bite. No chewing, no digestion, no nourishment. Malnutrition. Another way they avoid the present moment is to look ahead on their own schedules. The television news industry seems to revolve around what's coming next. Still to come, just ahead, up next, coming up this half hour, more to come, stay with us, still ahead, also later. They even preview what's going to happen as little as 1 hour later. During the 5 o'clock news, the empty-headed prick who does the 5 o'clock news will suddenly say, "Here's a look at what's coming up on the 6 o'clock news." Then the empty-headed prick who does the 6 o'clock news will appear in shirt sleeves in the newsroom to create the illusion of actual work and tell you about several stories that the empty-headed prick who does the 5 o'clock news should already have told you about if he were really a newsman. And so it goes around the clock. On the 5 o'clock news, they tell you about the 6 o'clock news. At 6 o'clock, they tell you about 11. At 11, they plug the morning news. The morning man promos the noontime lady, and sure enough, a little later afternoon, here comes that empty-headed prick from the 5 o'clock news to tell you what he's going to do on the 5 o'clock news. You know, if a guy were paranoid, he might not be blamed for thinking that the people who run things don't want you dwelling too much on the present. Because keep in mind, the news media are not independent. They're a sort of bulletin board and public relations firm for the ruling class, the people who run things. Those who decide what news you will or will not hear are paid by and tolerated purely at the whim of those who hold economic power. If the parent corporation doesn't want you to know something, it won't be on the news. Period. Or at the very least, it will be slanted to suit them and then barely followed up. Enjoy your snooze, folks.
Boy, ain't that Detroit. Yeah, the Pope of the Church of What's Happening Now. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker as usual, and it's Thursday. And you know what? If you notice every once in a while, I did it twice this week. I chopped off the end of the show because I pressed the wrong button on my recorder, which is electronic, and once I've pressed it, I can't straighten it out unless I use a different kind of recorder. Well, anyhow, I just have to be more careful, so that's why you get, once in a while, two parts to the radio show. Well, where was I? Where in the hell was I, man? Come on. Hey, we got some people here today snuck in the back door. Yeah. I don't know. They look sort of seedy to me. Yeah, I know. You look like a bunch of criminals. It's the militia! The militia's here! How about that? Hey! All 16 of them. Yeah! Yeah, sit down and shut up. Well, I hardly ever have anybody in the... any strangers in the bunker, but I saw these militia guys training in the woods, and I invited them in to let them know what they're in for, because the Ruskies have a whole new batch of new weapons that they're showing off over there, going over just to go after ISIS. Oh, you thought they were just wanted ISIS? No. This is to try out their new weapons. Their new weapons of mass destruction. So you know what that means. A lot of their old weapons will be available on the market. So we can buy them up and bring them back for our weapons of mass destruction used equipment yard. So anyhow, I'm going to give them a little lecture on these new weapons here. You just stand by and pay attention, everybody. And I don't want no noise and yelling in here. And put the beer cans down, please. Now, I think you know my position on all this crap. I don't trust Putin any farther than I trust anybody else. I trust no world leaders to be a friend of the mass, so-called masses, not to be labeled as a lefty. So Putin's trying out all his new weapons on ISIS over there, and the United States is too, I guess. Okay, boys, now here, if you're going to hide out in the woods and get ready to do battle with the military-industrial complex, you need to know this. Especially if it's the Russians. But the Americans got stuff just as bad or worse. Russia's got a new bomber called the Tu-160. And the Tu-95MS. They go through their baptism of fire in Syria. So the generals can see how well they kill. Russia has stepped up its counterterrorism efforts in Syria by bringing in the Tu-95 Bear and the Tu-160 strategic bombers, as well as Tupolev Tu-22 Blinder medium bomber. On Tuesday, the aircraft hit ISIL targets for the first time since Moscow launched its aerial campaign in late September. Now, let me tell you something, boys. This ISIS, or whatever you want to call them, these are unconventional warfare people. These are guerrilla types. Now, they're hiding all among the people in their houses, in their churches, or, you know, mosques, or whatever. So when you're bombing the shit out of these deals, you got to be hitting tremendous amount of innocent people who just want to stay out of the way. Remember that. They can't, from a couple of miles in the sky, they can't distinguish the good guys from the bad guys. So both sides, Russia, United States, are bombing the shit out of everything to get these guys. Now, these guys could be got much easier. I'm not going to give them the secrets to that stuff because they wouldn't listen to me anyhow. I would have an international hit squad dedicated to one thing, going after naughty leaders. But that scares the bejesus out of these people in power because they're afraid it's going to happen to them. Like back at the turn of the last century when the, that was the anarchists. And the anarchists were pretty sharp. They got a pretty good ideology, too, as far as I'm concerned. Anarchy doesn't mean that you don't want any government. Anarchy just means you want a very limited government. Because all governments become corrupt. All empires become corrupt. And all empires feed off their people. And if their people resist, they kill them. So anyhow, that's the story there. So this ISIS outfit, they're simply unconventional warfare people. Whether you agree with their nut religion or not, and like a lot of people say, that most of these guys are being radicalized in Europe and travel back to the Middle East to become great. I remember when the right wing was a lot like that. Maybe not so vicious, but I remember when people used to get really radical about like Christian identity and stuff like that. And I was into it, so I know. And once you get caught up in it too much, you can get carried away. And a lot of those guys got killed, and a lot of them went to prison. They had the best interest as far as the race at heart, but they got off on a tangent, like this ISIS. Instead of just declaring a caliphate for the people and play down the religious aspects, they're trying to maintain themselves by just concentrating on the religious aspects. And I don't think that's a long-range effective method. Short range, it works out pretty good. But long range, no, it doesn't. Anyhow, the anarchists, I like their methods because, not all their methods, of course, because some collateral damage was pretty bad. But most of the time, they went after the real bastards at the top, sort of like the Red Army did in Germany. I don't remember how much collateral damage the Red Army caused, but I mean the guys who went after the top criminals in the country. They didn't waste their time, and they didn't go around blowing up the little people, the man on the street. They refined their attacks and went after the people who are really behind the deals. I mean, you know, the ruling class that are running the show, the military-industrial complex, all that stuff. They went after those kind of people. And ISIS is making a big mistake. They've got the men, they got the power. They could easily go after the real bad guys and not be bombing theaters and so forth. That's why I don't, I'm suspicious that it's a false flag movement, that whenever you're going around like the IRA tried to do, not in the beginning but towards the end, blow up department stores and theaters and so forth, I begin to believe that's false flag stuff. Serves the enemy itself. But when the IRA went after Lord Mountbatten, was it? Remember him? A big shot English officer? I forget whether Mountbatten was a naval officer or army officer. I believe he was a naval, but anyhow. The IRA saw him as a real bad guy. Well, I don't know every detail about it, but I'm just saying what they saw, and he was sailing around the ocean there someplace on his big yacht, and it went sky high. It blew up. Now, the people behind that didn't hurt any common working people, didn't bomb any theaters or football games and like that. They went after the real top guys, or close to it. And I thought that was a very humane way to carry on a warfare. You know, like they're after Bin Laden. Well, they could have had Bin Laden any time they wanted to, but Bin Laden was created by the CIA, and he was useful to them to scare the shit out of the American people to vote for a Republican Party or war hawks to create and build and more weapons and drain the GNP. If they really had wanted him, they would have done sort of like they did at the end there. If they got him, I don't know for sure, because when you wrap a guy up in plastic and put him on a ship, take him out in the middle of the ocean and dump him, it's pretty hard to do forensics on who was who and was he who he said they said he was or anything, you know. But these hit teams like we have in the military could be refined to super hit teams. That when somebody causes a big problem in leadership in the world, they just go out and zero in on one guy. And you pay the guys that get him $1 million, and they live in a lap of luxury the rest of their lives. It would be a very good way to spend your money, because we're spending billions now moving armies all over the world, navies all over the world, aircraft all over the world, building more and more weapons, usually just to get one guy, the leader. But they don't want to get that around about going for the leader. There might be a few guys in this country be scratching where they don't itch. Hey, mama, what was that noise? I heard a noise downstairs. But even if forces or ISIS or anybody like that would simply say, well, we're willing to expend 10,000 fighters just to get one guy, they couldn't miss. Anybody can be got to. Any fucking body in the world can be gotten to. That's why I sort of, Bob Miles and I used to laugh about it, you know, about bodyguards and all that. And I told you before, Bob Miles said, I said, how come you got no bodyguards with you, Bob? He said, because I'd have to save their ass, that's why. I have never yet been in a position where I really had to have a bodyguard. I've had bodyguards once in a while, but some of those bodyguards turned out to be less than trustworthy, so I've always felt using proper precaution is about the best way you can stay alive without a bodyguard. Like I say, if somebody wants you really bad enough, they'll get you. They'll James Earl Ray you. James Earl Ray followed these guys around, even Nixon, I think, all over the country. Yeah, just himself and his little old car and his little old gun. And when he got the right spot and he had the right conditions and he felt this was the time, he did it. And, I mean, you know, instead of sending armies after somebody, you just send James Earl Ray. Yeah. Very successful. Told you, you should read Mind of an Assassin. That book is still around, and that's about James Earl Ray. It's a very, very interesting book, and James Earl Ray came from a long history and a family of poor working class, petty criminals and all that kind of stuff, bunch of people. And so they knew the ins and outs of things, you know. Well, anyhow, I'm getting way off the track, as usual. But you know how I am, boys and girls. That's the way I is. Now let's go find ourselves another one of the new weapons they're trying out. On trying to kill all the ISIS people, but they're killing thousands of people who have nothing to do with ISIS and blowing their houses apart and their towns and everything. There's going to be nothing left. Did I mention the Tupolev, Tupolev Tu-169 Blackjack strategic bomber? Boy, there's quite a deal. Quote, if the U.S.-led coalition fights against terrorists as efficiently as we do, the Russians, the situation in the Middle East would change dramatically, he told reporters. Quote, at the moment, the U.S. does not seem to be ready to do this. At the same time, it has become increasingly difficult for Washington to explain why it does not want to cooperate with Russia. Putin added, some of you people probably think I'm too cynical, but I'm not cynical enough. Because behind any big deal like this, there's follow the money, follow the weapons manufacturers, follow all that. Now, once in a while, maybe they do something good, but usually it's not. It's collateral damage and use the excuse, well, we couldn't get to ISIS without bombing Joe Mucatello and his wife while they were having a picnic. You know, when you make an omelet, you got to break some eggs, God damn it. Well, I see where... Now, let me give you, there's 5 new bombers and fighters being used by the Russians on this pretty well bombed out country of Syria. There's the Su-24M, the tactical bomber. They got 30 of them. The Su-25 strike aircraft. They got 12 of them. And the Su-34 tactical bomber. They got 4 of them. And they got the Su-30 fighter, number unknown. They get the ML-24, I believe it is, helicopter gunship, 7 units, 7. Seems to me that you could, with a whole cadre of those gunships, you could knock out any problem you've got in close enough range where you wouldn't have too much collateral damage using all these high elevation bombers. Russia just unveiled a new high-speed diesel submarine too. I guess they've learned their lesson about nuclear-powered submarines, because a friend of mine did some work for the government, and after the collapse of the Soviets, he was over there in Vladivostok, it's easy for me to say. And that's where he saw all these Russian nuclear-powered subs. And they were all leaking. They were all leaking. And they're trying to figure out how to get rid of them. I don't know whatever happened to those subs. But he saw them firsthand. A good friend of mine. He also worked on cold fusion, too, down in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. But he threw up his hands and came back to California because a Jew took over the operation. And he just couldn't. Not that if the Jew would have been competent, it would have been different. But he was an asshole. So my friend quit and came back to California and did not proceed with fusion research. Too bad. Well, now I see a footnote here that Russia's air group in Syria doubles, consists of 69 warplanes. Now, Syria's not that big, man. 69 warplanes bombing the shit out of Syria? Oh, man, there's not going to be anything left. Well, this is an interesting bit. Hacktivist group, Anonymous. You know, that's the one that was fronting all the Klan guys, you know, the Hollywood Klan. That was a big mistake, because that was putting too much energy behind something that doesn't make any difference. I was surprised Anonymous got involved in that. But they've accused the San Francisco Web Services Company of protecting pro-ISIL websites with cyber attacks. Isn't that interesting? ISIL exploits the internet and social media sites to spread its propaganda and promote its activities. It also uses the web services to guard the group from cyber attacks. As more attempts are made to disrupt ISIL-related sites, members of the terrorist organization are circumnavigating attacks by using web services readily available on the market. Once again, at Cloudflare have been found to be providing services to pro-Islamic state websites. Shameful. From Anonymous. According to some members of Anonymous, web technology available from Cloudflare, a company providing content delivery network and distributing domain name services, is being used by unconventional warfare people that you call terrorists operating on the darknet and in cyberspace to prevent members of the hacktivist group from suspending ISIL-related propaganda. Following the recent terror attacks in Paris, Anonymous, who pledged to continue their cyber warfare campaign against ISIL, have accused Cloudflare of preventing them from doing so. That's interesting. Cloudflare protects its users from what's known as distributed denial of service attacks by rerouting connections through its own servers. It's able to stop groups like Anonymous who use DDoS attacks to overload ISIL websites with automated page views so they ultimately collapse. GhostSec, an anonymous affiliated counterterrorism network operating on the internet, say almost 40 pro-ISIL websites are using Cloudflare to stop their sites from being taken offline by hacktivists. According to the Epoch Times, 34 of these sites are spreading propaganda, 4 are terrorist forums, and 2 offer technical support. Wachalula Ghost said Cloudflare hides the origin of the site, and with the site being hidden, it's harder to be taken down, not only by us, but by our own government as well. That's interesting. Things get a little complicated, doesn't it, boys? Now, GhostSec, which is Ghost and then SEC, does not work for any government, but does pass on information on threats that they discover online. That covers a lot of territory. Its mission, as stated on its website, is, quote, to eliminate the online presence of Islamic extremist groups, such as Islamic State Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, Boko Haram, and Al-Shabaab, in an effort to stymie their recruitment and limit their ability to organize international terrorist efforts. Well, I wonder if they've done anything about the illegal activities of the bandit state of Israel. I wonder if they've done anything about their war against the Palestinians and so forth like that. Inquiring minds would like to know. You can find out about this, read more about it, and read a hell of a lot more. This is from this site called Sputnik.com, which appears to be Russian-controlled. But there's a lot of information you can beat against their lies against our lies and probably come up with the truth. Well, of course, the military-industrial complex in Washington is doing the same kind of stuff. The Pentagon test launched a Trident missile to send a message to Russia and China. It was not a coincidence that the U.S. Navy test-fired an unarmed Trident 2DS missile off the California coast on the same day U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter delivered a keynote address at the Reagan National Defense, or the War Forum, outlining Russia and China as potential threats. And if they're not now, we'll make sure they are in the future. Japan Business Press reported this, so there you go, all you war lovers. Do you realize how much of the ancient historical antiquities are being destroyed in the Middle East? And Assyria was the origin of tremendous amounts of civilization, and how they're just blowing the shit out of anything in any of these countries that has to do with even our origins, just like the Christians did at the Library of Alexandria, where they destroyed thousands of years of history and information. There's a hidden hand behind that too, and guess who I think it is? And that hidden hand is thrilled to death that the U.S. and Russia and everybody's been manipulated into, and even ISIL, of destroying the antiquities of our race and other races. Oh, there was one other weapon that I wanted to talk about, but I've lost it on the internet. But what it was, Russia has developed a small landmine that's about the size of a pancake, and it's got all kinds of electronic abilities in it to do far more damage. That's what we need, is more landmines around the world. Yeah, ones that think. And that could spread more shrapnel and kill more people. Yeah. Anyhow, that's a new from Russia with Love. How about that? And, of course, we're doing the same thing. Not we are, but our masters. The ruling class are doing it, proceeding, developing this kind of stuff like mad. Aren't they wonderful? See, they're putting out the false flag, I think. ISIL's attacks at Paris against a Russian plane, a sign of desperation, French intelligence experts say. I don't think so. I think they're being very effective. I think they're reverting to more effective tactics than just running around in a bunch of them waiting for somebody to bomb them in the desert. Well, let's go back and see how best they killed people back in the old days, now that we've covered how they do it in the new days. From A Pessimist's Guide to History. I love that pessimist stuff because I'm a pessimist. I'm an optimistic pessimist. In 1570 AD, the massacre of Novgorod, the Russian Tsar Ivan the Terrible, definitely a type A personality, arrived in the city of Novgorod on January 2nd, leading a restless army that he had already slaughtered citizens in towns and villages along its path. Of course, you understand, those are his people that he's killing. He had come to murder the people of the city, apparently because he believed they opposed him. Sounds like George Bush Jr. and Cheney. Yeah. On arriving, his soldiers first built high wooden walls around the city so that no one could escape. Wow. You know, normally the gentleman thing to do is to allow people who don't want to fight to escape. No, they don't want anybody to escape. And sealed the churches and monasteries to prevent anyone seeking sanctuary. Leading citizens and merchants were locked inside their homes while soldiers arrested city officials and clergymen. Then, before beginning the massacre, Ivan decided he needed money to pay his army. He announced that each priest and monk would pay a fine of 20 rubles. Those who could not pay were stripped and flogged to death in the town square. I don't know. Sometimes I look at Putin and I wonder whether he might be like that underneath. If you understand body language, watch Putin. He's got an insecure type of physical showing as far as I'm concerned. The way he shifts his eyes around and looks down at the ground all the time. It's like he's got some type of an inferiority complex that he's trying to overcompensate for. That's my opinion. Then on January 9th, Ivan ordered the killing of the general population to begin. Happy days! Each day the army was ordered to round up 1,000 citizens. Oh, who were then brutally tortured and killed in front of Ivan and his young son. What fun! Parents watched their children being bludgeoned to death, while elsewhere, women were slowly burned to death over fires. Now remember, there's a lot of people in the world, especially in Russia, that think this guy was the greatest guy that came along. Holes were carved in the frozen ice of the river Novgorod, and hundreds were killed by being pushed into the frigid water. Ivan was just living up to his name, like Tommy the Terrible. These and other atrocities lasted for 5 weeks, during which time an estimated 60,000 people were put to death. Boy, I'll tell you, back in those days, by the time you had all these piles of bodies, it must have stunk for miles, man. You'd have to travel 20 miles to get away from the stink. Finally, on February 12th, the Tsar assembled what remained of the citizens of Novgorod and announced they were pardoned, blamed the city's archbishop for bringing on the massacre, and then told him to forget your wrongs. Easy for him to say. Now, isn't that typical of world leaders? I mean, you know, we killed millions in Vietnam, plus got 50,000 of our own killed. And we tell the Vietnamese, oh, forget it. Let's do business again, like always. You know, to forget that we killed millions of your people Just forget it. Let's go back to get it back into business. Okay, one more here. I know I got to keep you all fired up to get over the weekend so we can get back to you on Moon's Day. 1572, the massacre of St. Bartholomew. Oh, another religious bloodbath. The eve of St. Bartholomew in Paris should have been should have been a day of celebration. Noblemen and royalty had gathered to celebrate the wedding of King Henry of Navarre to the sister of the French King Charles IX. Ruling class people. The union represented an alliance between two opposing forces in France, the Catholics and the Huguenots, French Protestants. Strife between these religious groups had already caused two wars, and France's stability was again at stake. Now, you can imagine how the average peasant was getting along at this time. Armies marching through one way, marching through the other way, and killing everybody. You just have to try to... Here they come, all. Let's run to the hills, man. Let's go up there with the Beverly Hillbillies. Maybe we'll be safe. Charles IX was a weak, ineffective king. Maybe that meant he didn't kill as many people. His mother, Catherine de Medici, had ruled France during his minority and still had great influence over the young ruler. It was she who planned the assassination of the Huguenot leader Gaspard de Coligny, and when the attempt failed, she persuaded her son the Huguenots would rise up against him. Thus the conspiracy began. Late on the night of St. Bartholomew's Eve, when most of Paris was asleep, Charles' royalist supporters locked the city gates, chained boats to the docks to prevent their being used for escape, and set guards at the city crossroads. All royalists wore white crosses on their hats to distinguish them, and they marked the houses where the Huguenots lived with other crosses. Then at exactly 2 a.m. on August the 24th, the bells of the city began to ring. A signal for the killing began. Royalist murderers, well plied with drink, they were drunk and roused to a frenzy. Nowadays they'd be roused to frenzy with heroin and cocaine, probably, by charges of heresy against their victims. That's an easy charge. You're a heretic. No, I ain't no heretic. Yeah, you're a heretic. I love the baby Jesus. No, you don't love the baby Jesus. You love the devil. I saw him at your house last night. Oh, no, come on. Well, they took up arms at first, targeting Huguenot victims, were located and put to death. These included the Coligny and other well-known Huguenot leaders in Paris. Even the first killings were barbaric. Well, what killing isn't barbaric? Lords and their families, including wives, small children, and bewildered servants, were rounded up and struck brutally with clubs and swords, then hacked to death. Sounds like some of the activity that we had in Iraq once we got there. Huguenots' guards were shot down or stabbed and left to die in the streets. Some victims were tossed still alive from the windows to be crushed on the streets below. The corpse of Coligny was beheaded, then dismembered, and hanged for public display. Royalists screamed, kill them, as they struck down their victims in this orgy of death. As the day progressed, the violence changed its nature. The killers turned into a wild mob, joined by beggars and thieves. In other words, politicians. The first victims had been selected for slaughter, but now the killing was done wildly, randomly, often to get the victim's possessions. Anyone with wealth became a likely target. One writer observed, if a person had money, or a well-paid office, or dangerous enemies, or even hungry heirs, then he was deemed a Huguenot. Sort of reminds me of some of the right wing. He shows wealth and intelligence or anything else, he's suddenly a Jew. Sorry, boys. The Seine became thick with floating bodies, some still alive. Corpses were dumped off bridges and thrown off from roofs. One murderer tossed young children screaming into the waters. Others shot at those who struggled to stay afloat. By midday, Paris officials pleaded with Charles to stop the violence. Finally, the king issued orders to end the carnage, but he was largely ignored. You know, you start these things, you never know where they're going to end. Days passed before the killing finally stopped, but then tens of thousands of people had died, and the violence had spread to other provinces, where still more Protestants were imprisoned and brutally murdered. Charles was learning to be a king, but he still needed a few lessons in mob control. Yeah, I was wrong about that little landmine that Russia has invented. Probably to keep up with the landmines that we've invented, or the military-industrial complex. Actually, they're about the size of a Big Mac, or a one of those big hamburgers without the bun. Yeah. They're great for little kids to play with, I'll tell you. They get a real bang out of that. See some of the militia members that are sitting here in the bunker today are getting a little purple around the gills when they're hearing about all these new weapons. They may change their mind about going out and hiding in the woods. Yeah, I see Bernie Sanders, the Democrat campaigner for president last night, and I heard this speech at a big university back east, and there's a lot of things he says I agree with. Yeah, I know, he's Jewish and he's homosexual, and of course he never can say anything right. No, I don't live that way. He said some very pro-working class things in his speech, and you know, not one major news network was there. Not one. They're greasing the tracks for the bitch, I won't say of Buchenwald, no. The bitch of Little Rock. How about that? Yeah, that's what they're looking for. And the other side's playing with Rubio. I don't think that's going to fly, do you? Besides, Trump's still in the lead. He's moving farther out into the lead. Oh, what fools we mortals be. Anyhow, in reading that pessimist stuff about history, you know, they were killing more people in Paris back then than they ever did now. We're pikers now. They killed 130 or 140 people. Back then they killed thousands. And it even went across the city limits out in the little towns. They killed them all. So if you want to hear about killing, just read a little history of Paris. You know, the killings of 100 and some people in Paris by ISIS, or so-called ISIS. That'd be like a little... just a little Friday night skirmish back in the old days. Well, the Kikes finally got Jonathan Pollard out of the slammer. He stole more secrets than anybody else in U.S. history up until that time. But that's all right. Those Kikes have been working on getting him out for a long time. A long time. But I wonder whether he feels safe going back to Israel. Or going to Israel. I mean, wouldn't it be much better for them to keep his mouth shut? I wouldn't doubt that Pollard, if he goes back to Israel, might suddenly make a mistake and walk in front of a truck, or even in this country. What do you think? Because he still knows a lot of things that people don't want to get out. And maybe he'll write an expose on the tactics that Israel took keeping him in. They say one thing, those Zionists, but they do another. that kept yapping about getting him out. I don't think they wanted him out. And also, Pollard is not allowed to leave the United States for 5 years. That's interesting. Very interesting. You know me, the old suspicious bastard. Terrible Tommy is suspicious. If anything looks a little strange according to logic, I'm on to it. Personally, I wouldn't give Pollard 5 years. I may be mistaken, but watch the news. This is sort of amusing coming out of Israel. ISIS fighters are terrified of being defeated by a woman. It completely contradicts their radical beliefs. That was from Lieutenant Adda, a combat commander in the Coed Caracal Battalion on the Israel-Sinai border. She's a beautiful gal. She looked very Aryan to me. But what do I know? Everybody's a Jew, according to the right wing. The IDF may have the most terrifying weapon. Oh, no. The Coed Caracal Battalion is deployed on the Israeli border with Egyptian Sinai Peninsula, where the Islamic State has claimed dozens of terrorist attacks, the latest being the bombed Russian airplane that was blown up shortly after taking off from the Sharm el-Sheikh airport in Sinai. Well, I don't know. We'll see about that as time goes on. I think a lot of times people are going to take credit for shit they never did just because it pumps them up. Well, Caracal Commander Lieutenant Ada says, that's this lady, Jewish pilot, I'm not afraid to confront terrorists if necessary. ISIS fighters are terrified of being defeated by a woman. It completely contradicts their radical beliefs. And a lot of American fundamentalists, Christian fundamentalists. Get back in that kitchen, woman. That Caracal Battalion is responsible for defending the volatile Israel-Sinai border established in 2004. It was the first battalion to fully integrate women as combat soldiers. Well, I guess she's not in a pilot. The battalion is trained to deal with terrorist infiltration, bombs on the border, shootings, and smuggling and crime, Lieutenant Ada adds. After the Russian plane went down, we realized how tangible the threat had become. My soldiers need to know that we are here to stand up against terrorism. Okay, there you go. When I took that tour over in Israel, we went through an area right below the Golan Heights, and there was a field. The Golan Heights were on my right, and this field was on my left. It had little flags all over it. I asked the tour guide, what's that? He said, that's a minefield. It's for about a mile, maybe not a mile, maybe a half a mile strip across, totally mined down there below the Gaza Strip. Well, here's wonderful news. U.S. Christ Insanity people delivered $600,000 to boost Jerusalem's security. Along with the aid to the victims, the fellowship is providing a 375,000 state-of-the-art mobile command vehicle to the Jerusalem municipality. Well, aren't the good people of America wonderful? The good Christian people of America. I wonder how much money they're sending to the Palestinians, or how many armed and security equipment they're sending to the Palestinians. You think none? Oh, come on. Well, if they try to land them in a boat, they just kill everybody. So there you go. Oh, you got to love those Christians, those Jesus people. They love everybody. But most of all, they love the kikes. Well, I see the Swedish synagogues are getting a little excited. They're shuttered over the terror of threat. They've closed them down. Quote, violent Islamism is still the biggest threat against Sweden, unquote, said Anders Stornberg, the director general of the Swedish Security Service. So the synagogues have shut down, man, in Sweden. I'm going to close out with the comedy portion of the show. Now, this will keep you in stitches all weekend till I get back here in the bunker, okay? Here we go.
It's a strange thing to feel invisible. Not in the metaphorical Ralph Ellison way, but to actually walk around campus knowing that people have this sharpened ability to look right through you. It's feeling and knowing that people have the convenience of ignoring the complexity of your identities. And oddly enough, the moment in which you don't feel quite invisible is when the group of fraternity guys drives by in their truck on a Saturday night yelling, "Roll Tide, nigger." Or when a mysterious hand writes "fag" in aching black letters across the door to your room. But it's those moments in which you shrug and you think, well, at least they saw me.
The black body is a dark phantasm in the American consciousness. It has been depicted as both superhuman and childlike, both hypersexual and asexual, both nefariously cunning and rife with dull, brutish ignorance. It inhabits both the American public's most dreaded nightmares and their most fantastic dreams. It is everywhere and nowhere at the same time, hypervisible in moments of condemnation and scapegoating, and utterly invisible when that same dark body voices concern for its own physical safety or the denial of its supposedly inalienable rights. I go to class in buildings that are named after white supremacists, eugenicists, and slave owners. I live in a place where, after President Obama was reelected, my parents warned me to stay in my dorm room after I told them that white students were attacking black students and kicking down their doors. I spent the past 4 years in an environment that not only condones the Confederacy and its flag, but also praises it as a symbol of Southern heritage. It is not my heritage. I am surrounded by people who may not have to call me a nigger, but they make it clear to me just the same.
The history of our university is a testament to the need for cultural change and how it should transcend across the state. Like any freshman, eager to explore the social aspect of college and savor the endless freedom from responsibilities, I attended my first frat party. From the outside, it was like any other, but as I walked inside, my perception immediately changed. The atmosphere was cold, and the facial expressions of those around me was everything but inviting. I was the only person of color in the room, and the decoration of Confederate flags wasn't exactly comforting. However, a familiar face and the fraternity made me feel at ease. We began to talk, and I was introduced to many of the people at the party. From the corner of my eye, I saw a particular person stumbling toward us. Drunkenly, he uttered, "Hey, who's the nigger?" Moments like these have a profound impact on our character. I chose to be proactive and run. Not away from the institutionalized lives, but into a position of influence that would allow me to change culture. As SGA president, I thought I would have the opportunity to begin a changing tide. But still, I'm asked, who's the nigger?
Actually, I want to be transparent so I can sneak up on people, man. You should be happy. But I guess you're too black to be transparent. Oh, well, that was the comedy part of the show, and I hope you enjoyed it. I hope a lot of you were offended, and get back with me on Monday, and I'll try harder to offend you more, man. Whether it's religion, race, military, police, whatever, I'll try to figure it out. And meanwhile, I'm going to say goodbye to all these militia guys that are not too happy with the show. In fact, they've already left. They didn't even go over to the Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and get a drink. I'm going to set them up a free drink, and they left. You know, they're headed back to the woods in their 3/4-ton trucks. I asked them what kind of armaments they've got, and they said, "Armaments? Well, I got a goddamn shotgun and a .30-30. I said, "Any heavy armaments?" What do you mean? Like a damn caterpillar or something like that? Yeah, like a caterpillar. Well, we got a couple of those. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. See you on Moonsday, 14-5. And watch out for those new Russian fighters flying over.
Thank you. that gal I left behind. Well, it's bright in the heavens and the wheels are flying. Maybe I'm gonna never seem to fade. The fire gone out, but the light is never dying. Who says I can't get heavenly aid?
A long one, but that's one of my favorites. I've got a lot of favorites, of course. 14-5, for sure.